Good afternoon. I hope you found some refreshing lunch. This afternoon we're going to have James Westby talking to us about the Ubuntu Distributed Development Model and how awesome it is.
Hi. So I'm going to be talking about Ubuntu Distributed Development, or as you heard this morning, it was called Distributed Development. But this probably isn't clear for those of you who haven't been involved with Ubuntu for the past couple of years, so I decided to give it a subtitle, but too late to actually get it on the program. So I decided to call it Distributions and Distributed Version Control Systems. But I decided there wasn't quite enough D's in that title, so I called it Distributions Divergence and Distributed Version Control Systems to make sure your D quotient was high enough for the week. So I want to make a little plea on behalf of distributions. They're not just there because they allow you to use DPKG or RPM to manage the software installed in your system, even though that's brilliant. They're not just there so you can use apt-get to install pretty much any piece of open source software there is available, even though that's brilliant as well. They're not just there to provide installation media. Loads of installation media. So much installation media that people actually make statues out of the waste. Or so much that even make incredibly huge statues out of the waste and float them on water for no apparent reason. This is all very good as well. But they're important as they strive to be more than just the sum of their parts. They aim to give you a system which you can use every day because all the pieces work together. When you install a new package, you know it's going to work well with the packages you already have installed and things like that. This gives you a good base to work on so you can get on developing the piece of free software you're interested in or working your day job or whatever it is you want to achieve with your computer. So if you will, would you imagine a jigsaw, but not just the sort of jigsaw you buy in a shop, a collaboratively developed jigsaw by people spread all over the world, all over the internet, who don't necessarily know what the person next door is going to be doing with their piece. So a distribution is kind of takes all the pieces and puts them together into a box so that you can use them, and they'll ensure that all the pieces fit together in the end, because there'll probably be 74 corner pieces come from all these people making all the pieces, because everyone wants to make the corner piece. So we just pick the four best corner pieces, and then we pick all the pieces that go with them so that you have something where all the bits fit together and you have a complete jigsaw at the end of it. Now, the great thing about this is that the picture you get at the end comes mainly from the people who made the individual pieces. The overall picture is designed by the people who made the pieces, but the distribution has some influence on that, but is mainly about making sure that all the bits fit together so that you have a jigsaw which you can put together with your gran on Christmas Day. This is the great thing about distributions, and some people have said that the way distributions work, that they are a go-between between the free software developers and the users of free software, isn't ideal. And some people have proposed that we need to change the way we think about distributions or eliminate them entirely. And I'm not against this per se. I work on a distribution, and I think it's incredibly important, but I don't think they have to stay the same looking as they are now, and in fact, some of the things which I will present today may well help move towards a different picture. But whatever we end up with, we have to have this role of making sure that all the pieces fit together, that it's not just an individual developer's interests that are being served, because you will typically end up with a hole which is not as pleasant to use as we currently have. So. Here's a picture of how this process is supposed to work in an idealized world. At the top, you have the software here represented by a piece of GNOME software. And this flows down to Debian, which packages it up and ships it in its distribution. And this flows down to Ubuntu, which may make some modifications, or, as we saw yesterday, will take most of it unmodified because Debian does a great job of it already, and packages it as well. And time passes on the horizontal axis. So there's a further release which is packaged again and which is brought down into Ubuntu, and everything carries on like this. And flowing back upwards are the possible modifications that are made. So in order to package it well, there might need to be a change made. But that shouldn't stick around forever. It should make it back up the graph as quickly as possible. Now, this is how things are supposed to work in theory. But as is often the case, the practice gets in the way. And while this is the ideal we should be striving for, it's often the case that the desire to provide a good distribution conflicts with this ideal. So let's have a look at some of the ways in which providing a good distribution can get in the way. So we start off with the same left edge as we had before. A piece of software is packaged in Debian, and then it is perhaps modified in Ubuntu. And now the Ubuntu ships it in a different default configuration, or with a different X server, or with a different kernel, or something like that. And so finds a particular bug quicker than Debian and quicker than Upstream did, because they have a lot of users running that configuration. So they find this really important bug and come up with a patch. And they send it upstream to the GNOME developers, who apply it to their Git tree without making a new release. And because it's a different default configuration than Debian, but it's still possible to configure it this way in Debian, Debian makes a new release with this patch included, because some people are running into this serious problem. It might be a data loss issue or something like that. So now we have this patch in all three places. GNOME makes a new release with this patch because they want to get it out of there as well. And at this point, Debian is frozen for their release. So they don't want to include this new version yet because they're busy trying to release, and they don't want to introduce new software and possible new bugs. They already have this critical patch, which they know about, so they don't need to pull that in, but they don't want to pull in all the new features. So Ubuntu jumps ahead of Debian for a little bit and pulls this new one down. And then it's coming up to Ubuntu release. So Ubuntu wants to pull in the changes from all the changes are currently in Git, which aren't quite released yet, into Ubuntu before the feature freeze, so that they can get as much testing as possible. So they take a Git snapshot and put that into Ubuntu. That wasn't quite the... Did I miss the slide? Right. So it's supposed to all complete and look fairly similar, but I've managed to delete the slide somewhat. But that's an impression of some of the other influences which can get in the way of the idealized picture. So in addition... Sorry. Right. So in this picture, there can be many sources of divergence going on. And there may be some of the temporary kind, where it's just where it's the patch going into Ubuntu, just as it's being patched in GNOME as well in the first case, or it may be a permanent kind, which may be, say, the different default configuration between Debian and Ubuntu. There are these different kinds, and they're not inherently bad in themselves, but they can definitely be a source of animosity and frustration and bugs and conflict and flame wars and all of that sort of thing. But usually what defines whether it's going to be kind of the kind that we're fine with or the kind which causes flame wars is whether there was communication beforehand. Usually, if you approach the upstream developer when you're about to patch the package and say, oh, I have this patch for this critical bug and I want to get it out there so users of your software aren't running into it, because we're getting hundreds of bug reports a day from Ubuntu users about it, then they'll review the patch and they will often say that's great, or give you suggested improvements, and apply it to their Git tree and say go ahead and do it until we've done the new release, because often people won't want to jump ahead and make a release just for that patch. But if they do, then that's even better. So often it's the communication which makes the difference. So that is absolutely vital, and I'm not here to suggest that we can do anything that removes the need for this communication. But I am here to suggest that there are certain things which stand in the way of that communication. And if we can remove them or make them easier to do, then we can spend more time on this communication. We can have more time for it and not feel that we have to skip over it sometimes to try and get what we need done. Yes. No, not entirely. You mean why Debian's kind of like dangling in the middle there? Well, it depends on who you talk to as to whether Debian and stable should be used for new upstream releases while Debian testing is frozen. Some people will say that it should be, some people will say that it shouldn't be. So, Yes. Well, I was saying this is unstable in my picture, but I was assuming that this package was packaged by someone who doesn't upload to unstable while testing is frozen for release, which some people certainly do. I don't want to dwell too much on the details of what goes on here. I just wanted to give an impression how some influences can get in the way and disrupt this picture from the geometric ideal that I had before. So some of the barriers which get in the way of the communication. So if you want to work on, say, the cheese webcam project from GNOME, then you need to run git clone git.gnome.org/cheese. And this will get you the upstream code of cheese in Git, and you can make your patch. You can git format patch, git send email to the mailing list, or attach it to the bug tracker, or whatever the process is for this particular project. And you have to be familiar with the version control system, and you have to know what the preferred way of submitting patches is, because some projects are good and will take patches in kind of any form they come, if they appear on the mailing list or in the bug tracker. Some places will just ignore them if they don't conform to their ideal way of the patch arriving, and most projects are in the middle somewhere. So that would be how you, if you wanted to make this change, that would be how you started to make it in GNOME. If you want to then provide the patch to Debian, then you've got to start by running svn checkout, svn.gnome.org, something, 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 cheese. So now you're using svn. You were using Git before. And now you've got to work out how the package GNOME team wants their patches submitted, whether by talking to the IRC or attaching it to a bug or whatever system they use. But now you've worked that out and you've managed to get it into two of the distributions. So now you come to Ubuntu. So, any guesses what comes next? Yes, Bazaar. Bazaar branch, LP, Ubuntu desktop, cheese, Ubuntu. So you've got to work out where that branch is. You've got to work out how to submit it to them. You've got to know Bazaar. So now, just to work on this one project, you've got to know three version control systems. That's not ideal. It's the situation we're in. So some people are going to be thinking, oh, everyone should just use Git. But there are reasons why it's SVN in the middle, because that was GNOME's only been in Git for a year. So the package GNOME team could now switch to use Git, and the Ubuntu desktop team could follow them to use Git. But the Ubuntu desktop team doesn't only work with GNOME projects. They also package some things from Bazaar and package some things from HG. So this issue, I picked an example. It was an example at random, but I picked an example where we actually had all three version control systems going on. But the problem doesn't go away just by saying, oh, GNOME uses Git, everyone should follow them, even if that argument has some merit. So this slide is to illustrate that there are hurdles to jump over in order to take a patch and even get it into the packaged versions of that project. So even the intent to do it right means that you have to walk into these kind of situations. So the worst case is, and this isn't necessarily the worst case, but the worst case would be where that working on the patch for one project doesn't help you in any way except for having the patch to get it into the other ones. So you have to go and basically make the same change again, another version control system, and format it in a different way and submit it somewhere completely differently, so that you've done the work once, but then you have to do the work a whole other time again, rather than being able to reuse most of it. So that would be the worst case. My ideal would be that once I've done it in one of these, whichever one, it would be essentially one command or one operation, or a couple of commands, but well-known ones once you knew what you were doing, that that allowed you to take the one change and pull it into any of the other ones, depending on where you started. So that's the ideal I would like to get to. And this obviously takes a few things. We obviously need some tools to help us convert between the formats and things like that. And we also need more information about what the cheese project's preferred form for patch submission is, whether they want it on the mailing list or in the bug tracker. We need to have that information somewhere rather than it having to be in each and every developer's head. So I'm not just here to complain. You know, you can get that on any mailing list. So what are we going to do about it? So in Ubuntu, we're working towards solving this issue by making use of three things: the Ubuntu development community, Bazaar, and Launchpad. Now, each of these has alternatives, but in this case, all of them are complementary. And the features that each of them brings to the solution depends on the features the other ones have. So it's all very interdependent. You could come up with parallel solutions in other version control systems. And we heard yesterday in Martin's talk about the vcspackage.org effort, which is aiming to do some of the similar things in a cross-distribution, cross-version control system way. And these aren't incompatible aims. This would be the start of the Bazaar Ubuntu solution to the vcspackage.org effort, even though it's not at the point of solving that problem yet. So what I'm presenting here is what we're working on, and even though you might have different preferred technologies, it shouldn't stop you going away and doing a great system yourself if you wish. We should just make sure to work together that they're not incompatible in the way that Martin wishes. So why do we want to use Bazaar in version in Ubuntu? Or why do we want to use a distributed version control in Ubuntu? Well, the great thing is that this picture of the theory of how things work could well be a pictorial representation of the revision history of this development in a distributed version control system. Or to put it another way, a distributed version control system models the way things are supposed to work in theory. So it makes a very good base for this by having the tool nicely represent the way you are supposed to work. And the great thing is that this, which is the full practice picture, could also be a picture of the revision history and a distributed version control system. So by using a distributed version control system, we have a system which works for what we need to do in theory and in practice, at least in theory. Right, for those not familiar with Ubuntu development, as I guess some of you aren't, the way it works now is based on the way Debian development has been done for a long time, which is based around tarballs and patches and pushing around them in the form of source packages and diff files to move them around. And you end up with, you can infer something like this with the history of what happened, but it's not stored in one unit. You have to go out there and assemble it yourself by downloading tarballs and applying diffs and things like that, which isn't ideal. So there are many operations that are painful to do in the current development system, which would be great to do, for instance, seeing a log of the history of this package, or using annotate to find out who changed a particular line, which you know is causing a bug. And using a distributed version control system, running annotate tells you whether the change was made in Ubuntu or in Debian or upstream, which is quite a nice thing. So the tarballs and patches way is obviously allows you to do great things because we have come a long way with that. But switching to a distributed version control system to do the same thing gives you a solid development to go further. It gives you a way to it makes it easier to write tools to interact with things, so you can write much richer tools to help you with the process of day-to-day stuff. And it aligns us closer with existing practices for development in other projects. So as we saw earlier, GNOME is now using Git, so they're using a distributed version control. So using distributed version control means that there isn't so much of a chasm between upstream development and with package development. It means you are becoming more of what you appear to be and just being a branch off upstream. So where are we today? We now have Bazaar branches available for every single Ubuntu package, close enough. And here you can see an example, which is the Bazaar branches for the cheese package in Ubuntu. So we now have these branches available, and you can work on them if you wish. This means that you can get the source code for any package in Ubuntu by substituting the source package name in at the end of this command line. This means that if you run Ubuntu and you find a bug and you know how to fix it, then you can start by running this command and getting the source code and making the change there, pushing it up to Launchpad and proposing a review, much like you would if you were modifying a upstream project, which is in Bazaar hosted on Launchpad. Now, this is good because it means you have to know slightly less Debian Ubuntu-specific stuff to get working with packages. While this could be apt-get source cheese, you then get a source package, and it's not exactly clear how to... you can then make the change in that, but it's not clear how to get that change back, whereas with a version control system, you know, you commit and push, and you propose for merging. So this means that we now have all of Ubuntu in Bazaar, but that doesn't change the other parts of the picture. It doesn't change that the Git is using GNOME. GNOME is using Git, and it doesn't change that Debian is using Subversion. So how do we plan to fix that? So we're going to convince everyone to switch to Bazaar. But no, I thought I might slip that on past you. So the change is, in fact, a little more sensible than that. Thanks mainly to the work of Yelmer, we have plugins for Bazaar, which allow us to work with Mercurial and Git and Subversion repositories as if they were Bazaar branches. Along with Launchpad's code import feature, this means that we can provide Bazaar branches for every single, almost every single upstream project, those that have a public version control system as a first code. And once this project is completed, you'll be able to merge those with the Ubuntu branches. So this would then allow you to merge and cherry pick fixes from upstream directly into the Ubuntu package. And so this helps with the code flowing one way down towards the distribution. But it doesn't necessarily help with the code flowing back upstream, because where the project is in Bazaar, we're using a mirror. So we're not even basing ourselves directly on the same code, but not on the same revision control system that you are using. So the key to the solution would start around the bzdar send command. For those not familiar with it, this is a tool which wraps up your changes that you've made and submits them back to a different place, to the place where you got them from. So this is the it's possible to configure it such that it knows the right thing to do if you just run it with no arguments, that's what's being shown here. But it currently won't know the right thing to do for an Ubuntu package to send it upstream. And as we're working, we'll be able to modify it such that with an extra argument or two, it will know how to, or even a wrapper command, it would know how to send the changes upstream. And also, again, thanks to Yelmer, it will know how to send them in the preferred diff form for the version control system it is sending to. So if you're working from a mirror of a Git branch and you tell it to send the changes from that Git branch, it can know to put them into Git formatted patches. Which means that that you never leave Bazaar, but the upstream sees it arriving as Git, so they don't really know the difference. So this will go a long way to removing some of the hurdles it takes to sending a change upstream. So you won't necessarily have to find the upstream homepage and then find the link on there to their version control system and then check that out and then apply the patch you've already got and then work out where they want their patches sent and then send the patch there and then start the discussion. You'll be able to grab the change from a known location and make the change, apply the patch you have, and then run a command to start the conversation, which is fewer steps and gives you more time to actually have the conversation around the code, which it can never actually replace. So in summary, there's no substitute for people. People talking about the changes they plan to make and people reviewing those same changes. And people taking the time to submit the changes that they have to the upstream code base. However, we can give the people the tools, make the repetitive tasks, and the small things you have to do to make the change easier and less time consuming, so that you actually have more time to have the conversations around the code. Any questions?
Traditionally for most Debian developers, they've kept patches using, you know, Qwilt or something similar with patch files in a, you know, patches directory. Is there any sort of idea here to, you know, have some sort of bzr command that can split out the list of sort of individual patches? I mean, that might require looms or pipelines or something, so that you can, you know, at a glance say, okay, these are the 10 different patches we've applied to this package. Because the difficulty I can see with this sort of thing is, you know, you've branched in from upstream and possibly from Debian, and you can apply patches and edit, and then, you know, you can push back individual stuff. But it's sort of difficult to see what's different between us and upstream. I mean, you can do a bzr missing, but that's sort of a little bit messy. Doesn't have maybe a decent description of what this particular patch is. You got to start rebasing if you want to edit individual patches. Is there any idea of how to address those issues?
There's absolutely an intent to address those issues and provide such functionality. And that's what Martin's talk was about yesterday, and we've been part of the discussions around that. But in order to provide a version control system-based list of patches and things like that, we need to use a version control system yet. So this is the precursor step to that, and we now have the branches available, so we're ready to start looking at how to actually implement the suggested ideas around that sort of thing. So it's absolutely my dream to provide that. Because the Qwilt-based methods and things like that are another impediment to people learning packaging, because it's an extra step. You can't just grab the code and hack on it. So it's my intent, but we're not there yet. Yes.
So bzr send, I like that. You type it in and I get a git whatever patch that I can just apply with my git command. Mm-hmm. I assume, but I want you to confirm this, that bzr then knows how to handle this when you do the next merge from upstream or from Debian. Bzr will actually not generate a merge conflict because I've accepted your patch. I don't know about bzr merging, how it works. So.
No. It can infer that if the delta disappears.
Okay.
If it ends up with a zero diff, then it can infer that it went in, but it can't know for sure because of limitations of Git.
Well, the Git can't do that.
Yeah,
exactly.
So it's the same reason why you can't currently bzr push to a Git repository using the foreign branch plugin. Because Git can't round-trip bzr revisions because it doesn't have any place for the extra data we need to store. And in addition to that, the Git serialization format doesn't currently allow you to specify, even if it could store it, doesn't allow you to specify the data. It's basically a flat patch with the commit message on top. So I would love to have that, but I see it as a limitation of Git currently. So we'll have to have the inferring if the patch disappears. And then a simple command to blow away this patch because it's been merged.
I'm just thinking right now because TopGit does something along those lines, like it has its own meta store at the bottom of a message. And maybe I'm going to look that up and maybe there's something we can do with this. It's definitely not standard and Git is not interested.
You can do things like SVN where you write into the bottom of the commit message some extra key value pairs, there's a resistance to do this for bazaar because Git people will dislike it. Yes, and plus it's horrible. There have been some ideas like writing extra Git trees, which have a format which kind of specifies the data without actually, you know, extra blobs or something like that. Perhaps along the lines of the Git, what's it called now, Git notes or something like that, which has been proposed, use a similar style to that, but there's been no work on it so far. But if we get that, then yes, you'll be able to do bazaar send, and then it will disappear when it comes back down.
Hi, I like the bazaar send command as well, but is it something whereby you hope so that it will eventually go bzr send and like figure out where it should send it to, or is that something you've got to manually configure, at least to start off with?
So it uses some configuration variables. So the branch you are submitting to is remembered. So you can specify it first or specify it directly in the configuration. And in addition to that, it can send to email addresses. It doesn't know about bug trackers currently, and maybe it shouldn't. But it knows about email addresses and can send an email. And there's a dash dash mail to parameter. And that can also be stored in the configuration. And the really nice thing is that if you are sending to a branch, then it can query that branch and look at its configuration. And there's a configuration setting called child submit to, which is the email address. So when you put a public branch up, you can set that as like, I want my patches to go here, please. And then your users can just run bzr send, and your patches appear where you want them to without them having to look anything up, which is a really nice feature. It's currently underutilized, I think, but that's the kind of automation that I'd like to see for this. Any more questions? Okay, thank you. Oh. Almost made it.
Do you use bzr to actually download it from Git or SVN as well? Mm-hmm. So you're pulling it straight away?
You can do that, yeah. So you install the appropriate plugin, and then you can run bzr branch SVN // whatever, and it will work out the right thing to do. But yeah, we don't have to provide that because you can set Launchpad up to do it for you in cron, basically. So you can then pull from a known location. So we'll also start to provide the slide. We'll also start to provide mappings. So the LP thing you saw, LP:// is a directory service, it's called. So it knows that you're talking about bazaar.launchpad.net/your, you know, it knows how to resolve things. So we can add something to that where we can say LP:// of cheese, and then it will use its internal database to look up what the URL is for the cheese project, which is associated with the cheese package, because they're not always the same name. And then you can just do bzr branch LP:// of cheese and get the upstream branch, or you know, bzr send LP:// of. Yes, you can do it directly, but we don't have to for this, but it's great for migration, and it's great for one-off usage of these things.
All the source branches that are currently in Launchpad under LP:Ubuntu, mm-hmm. What are they based on? Have they just been historical imports of Debian packages, or have you actually, in some cases, gone to upstream and branched off, you know, GNOME and pulled in?
No, they're an import of the history of the Debian and Ubuntu uploads, all of the uploads we can get our hands on. So they're tarball imports, basically. They're not based on the upstream branches. We're working towards making them based on the upstream, so rebasing them on top, but doing it for all packages based on the... So we don't even have imports of all the upstreams into bazaar yet. So we're starting with all the packages, so you can consistently use bazaar across all Ubuntu packages, and then we'll start rebasing them onto the upstreams when we find them, or when we can. So The idea is to work from the Ubuntu side out, so we get the benefit of being able to do one consistent thing across all the packages, and then start to add in the extra features that we want. Right. Thanks, everyone.